The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 3rd of February, 2026. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you on board for the next couple of hours here on the show. And don't forget, we want your views and your news as well. 086 6025 000. That is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 6025 000. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if you prefer, emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. Lots coming up after 10 o'clock. We've got Community Garda information, that and so much more besides. Rightio, let's start with a look at what's making the headlines in some of the newspapers. You heard Donald Kavanagh reference this here just at the top of the hour. Queen's University Belfast has cut ties with a former US senator who played a central role in brokering the Belfast Agreement over his links to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Yesterday, the university confirmed it had taken the decision to remove the name of George J. Mitchell from a flagship research centre called the Institute of Global Peace, Security and Justice. A commemorative bust of Mitchell, 92, is also to be removed from the university campus. The decision follows the emergence of new information contained in the Epstein files released on Friday, which included references to Senator Mitchell, the university said. Now, those files were released and they're not without consequence. If any of you have seen of any of the images, some of the images that have been released, I'm not talking about, you know, Peter Mandelson in his underpants, or, I mean, that's horrific enough in and of itself, but very seriously, Epstein in the company of young people, and I won't go any further than that because I know it's early and there could be some young ears listening, but just in the presence of young people. And thankfully, in Britain and some European countries and elsewhere, those that have been found not necessarily to have done anything wrong, but certainly questionable activity with someone who was a known sex offender and a child abuser, that there are consequences for it. I can't help but look at what's happening in the United States because we're so exposed to it, and nothing. Pure silence, no consequence for anyone at all. The issue of child abuse, which is what this is all about, has become so polarised that people on the left, or Republicans are protecting Republicans, and people on the right, the Democrats or whichever is left and right, are protecting that. Someone like, say, for instance, Elon Musk, who does come up for mention on program, this program, like all programs, because he's so influential. He has always claimed that he had very little contact with Epstein, and certainly no contact when it was clear that he was a sex offender with an interest in children. As it turns out, he was having regular contact, begging him effectively in these emails that have been released for access to his island. But now he's claiming that autism played a factor, that he didn't understand, that he's got a strange way of communicating, that some of the files are fake. Well, they're not fake. And this is the same guy who said that anyone in the files, you know, should be dealt with as quick as possible. But throughout, in the Donald Trump administration, there are 14, 15 people that are mentioned extensively in these files. And this is all post-knowledge that this man was a convicted child abuser. It really is quite remarkable. And it's all men with money. And I don't care what their politics are. I really couldn't care less what their politics are, but they're protected. And unfortunately, it's regular people that are insulating their fanboys, their heroes, if you know what I mean. But at least there is some sort of accountability, some sort of justice for the victims happening in other parts of the world. But the United States is just a law unto itself now, it would seem. On to the Irish Independent now. And Sinn Féin is standing over comments by its finance spokesperson, Donegal Deputy Piers Doherty, linking the withdrawal of cost-of-living payments to Ireland's support of Ukraine, which has drawn sharp criticism. Mr. Doherty's comments during a Dáil motion on approving Ireland's participation in the EU's $90 billion loan to the war-torn country has left his party open to charges of blatant populism and being soft on Russia. The EU is hoping to make the first tranche of the loan in April. It will include $60 billion that will support Ukraine in military spending and $30 billion in support of its national budget, including funding for hospitals, schools and electricity infrastructure. The deal was struck last month after EU countries failed to reach agreement on using frozen Russian assets to help Ukraine. Well, Sinn Féin's the only party to have opposed Ireland's participation, which will amount to around $1.3 billion in the Dáil vote last week. During the debate, Mr. Doherty said, well, in fact, you know, let's listen to what he had to say and you can determine, yours is the most important opinion, whether or not he was right or wrong.
At a time when families in Ireland are crippled by the cost of living crisis, and after a budget that gave ordinary workers nothing, this government are proposing that billions of euros are given to Ukraine for weapons of war. I'd rather see that money being invested in public services and cost of living supports across the European Union than in buying weapons of war. €90 billion delivered for Ukraine with the clear intention that the majority of that funding will be used for military purposes. This is about underwriting an enormous escalation in military financing through EU mechanisms in a war for which there is no credible peace process, no diplomatic roadmap, and no political horizon beyond further escalation. We are told these loans are going to be repaid through future reparations from Russia, but that is far from guaranteed. This government has made clear its intention to steadily erode Ireland's military neutrality through abandoning the triple lock, through creeping alignment with EU and NATO military structures, and now through the normalisation of EU-level military financing.
Yeah, so that's some of what he had to say. Fianna Fáil MEP Billy Kelleher, who has made frequent visits to Ukraine, said he was disgusted to see Sinn Féin trying to use the situation there as a scapegoat for the halting of cost of living measures in the last budget. What do you think? Do you think it's populism by Sinn Féin, or do you believe that they are speaking for you? Let us know. 086 60 25,000 086 60 25,000. And there is an article just in relation to that, not connected to that, because we heard the EU army being mentioned there, and it's in the Irish Daily Mirror today. European Union Foreign Policy Chief Kaya Kallas has rejected calls for European-wide army. She warned that it could be extremely dangerous as the bloc considers ways to provide its own security after the US warned that its priorities lie elsewhere. Talk of a European army has resurfaced amid tensions within NATO over President Donald Trump's threats to annex Greenland, the semi-autonomous territory of NATO ally Denmark. Those who say that we need a European army, maybe those people haven't really thought this through practically, Kallas said. If you're already part of NATO, then you can't create a separate army. Kallas told a security conference in Norway that the most important military asset during a crisis is the chain of command, who gives orders to whom. So just the reason I'm mentioning that is that the conversation about a European army is not just happening in Ireland, and that was comments there from the European Union Foreign Policy Chief, so that's high up the chain. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and their page 2 story. The percentage of people who believe anti-Semitism in Ireland is a problem has doubled in less than a decade to over 40% of Irish citizens, a European Commission report found. The survey showed 41% of Irish people now consider anti-Semitism a problem, up from 21% when a similar survey was conducted in 2018. Now, before I read on, like, I chat to an awful lot of people, and I've sat in this chair or chairs similar to it for over 20 years. And I'll be honest with you, I don't recall in person or on the phone anyone ever being critical of Jews to me. And that is the absolute God's honest truth. Now, I'm saying this in full knowledge that I could be completely naive and that maybe everybody's talking about this and I've just not encountered them, nor do I think about it myself. The closest I would have gotten to that would be people critical of Israel's action in Palestine. A lot of people very upset about that. But I've never heard it framed in an anti-Jew way. I've heard it talked, the conversation has happened in terms of a state and the actions of a state, i.e. Israel. And that's about it, really. Now, am I incredibly naive? Are there 4 out of 10 people out there now being exposed to anti-Semitism, sort of anti-Jew language? As I say, it's just not something I've ever encountered. Even in the conversations about people being very opposed to the genocide of Palestine by the Israelis, it's never come down to whether or not those responsible are Jews or not. And that's just the absolute God's honest truth. But apparently, 40% of Irish citizens say there is a problem with anti-Semitism in this country. Now, I could be missing something huge here and could get into bother for that. I'm just being completely honest with you. That's just my experience. Well, the research also found that 70% of respondents believe conflicts in the Middle East have an influence on the way Jewish people are perceived in this country. So, in other words, the way I would look at it, if I, maybe this is naive, but if I lived beside a Jewish person, firstly, how would I know? But if I did, I wouldn't be judging them on the actions of Israel. Again, maybe I'm missing something or I'm out of a loop, or, but that's just my experience. What has been yours? Do you believe we are an anti-Semitic country? Finally, the Irish Daily Star. Just an update on this trial that seems to be taking forever to get underway, but there is a date. The trial of ex-DUP leader Jeffrey Donaldson and his wife Eleanor on charges relating to alleged historical sexual offences is now expected to start in May. Mr. Donaldson, 63, has pleaded not guilty to 18 alleged offences. The charges include rape as well as allegations of indecent assault and gross indecency and span 1985 to 2008 involving two alleged victims. Mrs. Donaldson, 59, of Dromore County Down is facing charges of aiding and abetting, which she denies. The trial, which is expected to last 4 weeks, has been delayed due to her medical condition. Right, but it's going ahead now in May. But that is, of course, subject to changes again happening. Maybe she might become ill again. I don't know. There are calls on the Minister for Transport to intervene to protect the Donegal to Dublin afternoon flight amid fears it could be lost under a new contract for the Public Service Obligation Service. A new PSO or a new contract for PSO flights between Donegal Airport and Carrickfinn, Donegal Airport at Carrickfinn and Dublin Airport is due to commence on the 26th of February 2026. Eilish Docherty is Managing Director of Donegal Airport and is with me now. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time this Tuesday.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
Right, so for those who aren't aware, what is the current schedule for Dublin?
At the moment, we have a flight departing from Donegal at 8 in the morning that gets into Dublin at 10 to 9. And we have a flight time then leaving Dublin at 12:55, coming back into Donegal around 1:55, and then a departure to Dublin at 2:30. Then we have a return in the evening. The flight leaves Dublin at 6:50 in the evening, comes back into Donegal, and that aircraft overnights. And that's the critical issue here, that we have had an aircraft overnighting at Donegal Airport for the past 22 years as part of this PSO route. And that is what is intended to be taken away now. That aircraft is going to position back to Dublin every night and then come in to operate a flight from Dublin to Donegal at 6:25 in the morning.
Right, OK. So under the new schedule, sorry, just run it through what the new schedule would be then.
Yeah, so the new schedule would see the flight departing initially from Dublin Airport in the morning at 6:25, arriving into Donegal at 7:25, and then departing as normal at 8 o'clock to go to Dublin. And then there'd be an evening flight then leaving Dublin at 6:50 again in the evening, back into Donegal, and then a flight going back to Dublin at 8:30 at night time, landing back in Dublin at 9:30 p.m. So there'd be no midday rotation. Now, the concern that we have with those flight times is that that aircraft is not on the ground in Donegal, so there is no assurance for our passengers that there's an aircraft there in the morning. And it'll be impacted by weather issues trying to land into Donegal. It'll be delayed getting out of Dublin in the morning due to congestion and, you know, an ATR lining up against the 737 for takeoff. Who's going to get the priority there? So we just have serious concerns that will impact actually on our morning departure. That's that vital 8 a.m. flight that goes out.
So the afternoon flight is not as great a concern. I don't want to misinterpret what you're saying.
No, I mean, obviously that's a great concern as well. 48% of our passengers currently use that midday rotation. A lot of the passengers coming in and that, we have a lot of tourism passengers and that, people, you know, connecting in from, self-connecting from the UK, from Europe, from the US as well. So we have a lot of passengers coming in there, particularly during the summer months, who would use that afternoon flight to come in and then go back out again maybe in the morning. But, the afternoon flight is also very important. A lot of our passengers are travelling for medical appointments. They would go up on the flight at 8 a.m. They would go to their appointment and they would be able to come back home again on that 12:55 flight. This means now that they're going, if they go out at 8 o'clock in the morning, they're not going to get back home again until 8 in the evening. So it's a 12-hour day for people who are travelling for treatment, which is, it's too long a day for them as well. And the assurance, of not having the assurance that they're going to actually get out in time in the morning to make their appointment.
No, because just in case it hasn't been abundantly clear from what you're saying, and it is to me, but just in case, we are then at the whim of whatever might be happening down in Dublin every morning, whether or not that flight gets away, whether it gets away on time, if it lands, when it lands.
Exactly that, yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, obviously, if there's an aircraft on the ground, if we have like a foggy morning, if the aircraft's ready and it's able to go out, if you have, fog and suddenly the flight can't land, we're going to definitely have more cancellations and diversions than we would have if we actually had the aircraft in the night before. And it just gives comfort to people, they can check with the airport the night before, if they have a flight connection, if they have a medical appointment, if they have a reason that they have to be in Dublin by 10 a.m. in the morning, they can, if the aircraft has come in the night before, they know that that flight's going out in the morning. Whereas if they're waiting to see whether the flight can land, a lot of times people aren't going to be able to take the chance on that. They're going to have to travel by road or make alternative, transport arrangements.
Yes, and I'm not saying it is unique, but potentially the flight is, because we're so far away from the capital in terms of business, but also because a lot of the medical services that we need, and it's normally quite a dire situation, if the truth be told, are a long way away from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, the purpose of a PSO is to provide a transport option for people that are living in a disadvantaged community. We don't have train service, we don't have motorways. The whole purpose of the PSO is to serve the needs of a community where the transport infrastructure isn't on a par with other areas. And, so the needs of the community should be given priority in this. Flight times have to suit the needs of the users of the service. And, our passenger numbers have been growing year on year. That afternoon flight has been building passenger numbers, very steadily over the last number of years. And we just feel that we can't see how the flight, you're not going to fill 60 passengers onto an aircraft leaving Dublin at 6:25 in the morning. Or if they are, I'd love to know where they're coming from, because I personally can't see that, they'd have the same demand for service operating at that time in the morning.
So who is proposing this change to the schedule? Is it that the preferred airline wants that aircraft on the ground, say, for instance, for maintenance or what have you, overnight? Like, who is driving the change to this schedule?
Yeah, well, we don't have sight. Obviously, the contract, there's a request for tenders published last August. That is between the Department of Transport and any airline that wishes to bid for the tender. We've been advised back in December that the department had identified a preferred bidder. We never get any sight of what the actual tender is, so we were not made aware of any of this. It kind of only came to our attention about a fortnight ago. So it's obviously the airline has put their tender in based on these flight times.
Yes, but they would have, let's just say it's Emerald Airline, right, and they are continuing to operate the service. Do they have any, I wonder, influence to say, well, we would love to continue it, but based on this schedule? Like, I want to chase this up as you do, Ailish, but with whom? Mm-hmm. Like, who has decided, who's looked at this and said, right, it's better if the flight leaves Dublin empty at 6 odd in the morning and then is kept in Dublin overnight with all the obvious problems that you talked of? Like, who's driving this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the airline put in a submission based on what they want.
There's
a procurement team, as far as I understand, within the Department of Transport. So the Department of Transport, I'd imagine, examine tenders when they come in, and they should be examining them on the basis of first of all, do they meet the specification of the tender? And apparently this does meet the specification of the tender. But the second thing that should be looking at is this, is it good value for money? At the end of the day, it's, a contract that was offered in the region of 17 million for 4 years. That was based on the previous tender. So, you know, there has to be value for money for that tender as well.
But in my view, there has to be, in my view, because it is a PSO, it should be led by the need and demand of the people it services and why it serves those people, right? So if you've got a situation where you've got cancer patients potentially sitting in the airport not knowing if that flight's going to take off or if they're going to make their appointment, that's not serving the people. That's not a public service obligation because the public aren't being served by that. It sounds like they've got some sort of a hotshot business person in mind, rather than, you know, I'm not saying those people don't use this flight, but rather than what we need it for, if that makes sense.
Exactly that, yeah, and that's what we want to stress, that it is a service for the community and it has always got to meet the needs of the community. And, you know, for the past 22 years, it has done that by having the aircraft based overnight, and that's what we would like to see to continue, because that's the best service that we feel for the people of the area, and that's what's working for 22 years, so we don't see any need to change it now.
Just in terms of those flying into the region, this is almost secondary, of course. It's possible the 6 a.m. flight, 6 a.m. Proposed flight, it's not 6 a.m., it's a little after, right? But that flight and no afternoon flight, so then there's, if you're sort of flying into Dublin and you want to connect to the northwest, it doesn't sound like the evening flight's at a good time for that, and the morning flight certainly isn't. So I just wonder, when people are planning their holidays and looking at access to the northwest, is that potentially a factor as well? Because that afternoon flight feels like it might be more useful for inbound holidaymakers, for an example, or golfers or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the 6:25 flight, there are a number. There's a couple of transatlantic flights that come in that you would possibly connect with that, but not enough to, you know, to fill an aircraft, not enough to make it worthwhile in our view. Whereas, you know, that 12:55, you're picking up a wide range of flights coming in. People might have to wait a couple of hours to connect, but, you know, it's certainly a lot more option for people that are coming from other areas. As you said, golfers, tourism in the summertime, you know, year round. Likewise, that flight going back to Dublin at 8:30 in the evening that lands back in Dublin at 9:30, there are few of any flights connecting. In the summertime, you might have some connections, but you wouldn't have very many connections year-round that you can go to. You're not going to attend any event in Dublin at 9:30 at night. You know, we fail to see again where the connectivity is in those flight times.
Yeah, this is also an issue with PSOs, because you get paid one way or other, don't you? Whether or not it actually is full or half full or quarter full, I don't know. But finally, is anyone going to use the argument about technical difficulties to me? Because we have covered this in the past, right? Is an airline potentially going to come back to me or a government spokesperson and say, look, you know, flights have been delayed previously because of technical issues, and if the plane's on the ground in Dublin, that won't happen? I'm just trying to think of spin that could be put on this. Am I likely to hear this? And if so, what's the counterpoint?
There's very little historical data to back that up. We've had very few. I mean, I don't have the percentage on the tip of my tongue here, but the amount of times that they have actually gone tech on the ground, okay, and Donegal couldn't possibly be safe.
No. I'm just trying to cover all bases, because I might not get access to you when if we happen to get someone on. Okay, thanks very much for that. You've explained it really quite clearly to us, and I have a great understanding now. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Eilish Doherty, Managing Director of Donegal Airport. So, you know, it's not, you know, the fantastic people that are involved in the cancer flights and all that type of stuff. This is an essential piece of transport infrastructure to get us to the care that we need when we need it. It's not perfect, right, but it's far better. And we have it because we are so far removed from the capital. It's terrible. We don't want to have to travel to Dublin for cancer treatment or whatever it might be, but unfortunately we're forced to, and this is how we do it. This PSO, this new PSO, sounds to me like it's suiting an airline rather than the people that they're being paid by the taxpayer to serve. Michael, do you have a view on this? And what is it, please, Michael? Of course you do. Good morning to you.
I do, Greg. Good morning. So the flight currently starts off in Donegal in the morning and goes down to Dublin, and then there's a return flight at 9. The previous PSO to this started the same. The flight went down in the morning, then it turned around and came back up. Then the plane went to Glasgow, turned around and came back to Dublin, or sorry, back to Donegal for afternoon. Then in the afternoon, it went down to Dublin, they changed flight crew, and the plane came back up and overnighted. So when it changed the last time, since then, there's no morning flight back up, you know, 9, 10 o'clock like there had been previously. Yeah. So I go to the UK quite a bit and occasionally over to the States or and to Europe a couple of times a year. So since the PSO changed to what it is now, you know, if a traveller gets back into Dublin at 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, they have to hang around Dublin until the afternoon mm-hmm. for a flight back up, mm. whereas previously they didn't. But also going down in the evening, if you're getting an evening flight to somewhere, like going down, arriving in Dublin at 9 o'clock at night, like it's useless. And like that, like a flight up from Dublin.
Yeah.
Well, a flight up from Dublin at 6 o'clock in the morning, you'd have to be in the airport at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's going to facilitate nobody.
Yeah. Well, it might facilitate the airline. You see, that's the thing.
Well, that's about it, but there'll be very few passengers on the plane.
No, I don't imagine so. But because it's a public services, because it's a PSO flight, I presume they have a guaranteed income, whether that airplane's flying empty or full. Do you know what I mean? They're guaranteed.
I would imagine so, yes. Yeah. But it's not, like, it's a public service. It's not facilitating the public. And currently it's not either. Like, I would imagine, like the flight, so at the moment the flight goes down in the morning and it comes back up like at 2 o'clock or 1 or 2, like early afternoon, instead of just turning around and coming back up like at 10 or 10:30. So everyone that's going to America from Donegal and is returning back in on a flight between 5 and 9 a.m. has to drive or get the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So like currently, you know, when I haven't used the airport and I'm only 35 minutes from Donegal Airport, and you know, just because of the way the flights are, like I haven't been able to use it. So, like if I go to the north of England now, I drive over the ferry, and it's like 4 times the cost. Like the last return trip I did there a couple of weeks ago was 420, I think, for the ferry alone.
Right. Okay. Not to mention fuel and stuff. Okay. Michael, listen, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your opinion. I do appreciate it. Right. As it stands at Donegal Airport, there is a flight that departs in the morning from 7:55 a.m. That plane is situated at Donegal Airport. It overnights there. There is also an afternoon flight as well. But under changes that are being proposed now, the plane would be based in Dublin and fly up, presumably empty, to arrive in Donegal Airport and then depart. And then, of course, the afternoon flight would be gone and people feel the evening flight then is too late. And you know, that's going to be inconvenient for some people in terms of going to a football match or going to work or a business meeting or what have you. But a very important function of that flight is our access to medical care, life-saving medical care. And I don't think there's going to be a better person with an insight into this than Mary Coyle, who's founder of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. And as soon as I heard this story, Mary, I wanted your take on it, right? Because you're not going to spin it one way or other. You're going to give us the reality for the people that you work with. So what is your initial reaction, Mary, to these proposed changes?
Well, you know, Greg, I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that, first of all, that there was no consultation whatsoever. Absolutely none. We have over 500 patients that travel up and down to Dublin for cancer diagnosis or treatment. And we have children with long-term and life-limiting illnesses. And this is not practical. This is not practical for people going to Dublin. We have done so much work with St. Vincent's, St. Luke's, St. James's, and the oncology departments, the Irish Cancer Society, in order that patients going to Dublin would get early morning appointments so as that they could try and manage the lunchtime flight home. This is not practical at all because we're depending now on a flight leaving Dublin empty. absolutely empty. Who wants to come to Donegal at 6:30 in the morning? Nobody. Absolutely nobody. I'm so angry, Greg, because this is more about the airline than the people that are using it. And that's not what a PSO is about. So I just can't believe that this is something that seems to be signed and sealed and with no consultation. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe it, you know, that if we see the plane coming in at night, we know at least 95% or 98% the plane will go out in the mm-hmm, morning. Mm-hmm. And that brings a lot. It reduces the stress for people that are flying up in the morning. But now, how do you know that the flight will leave in time? How do you know that it will be in time, that it will land, and that these patients will actually make it to Dublin?
And I think Ailish made a really good point about to its priority in a very, very busy airport. So it would be competing with your 747s ETC each and every morning, you know, and this little plane. Where does it stand Absolutely. In the wider scale of things? I think it's a very critical point, Mary, that you've made about how this is part of a sequence. In other words, there's an understanding with the hospitals down there that this is when Donegal patients get in. If possible, this is when we can get them back home again. And that's intricate. That takes a lot of time to sort of get into place. It has to have a certain degree of certainty about the flights departure and its time of departure. All of that could effectively be thrown into disarray. And how could we expect these hospitals to reserve slots for us if there's uncertainty as to whether or not we could actually make those slots? That's a big deal for me.
It is. And it's a huge deal for us. It is huge because, you know, if patients were really stressed about this, they would start, if at all, using the flight at night to ensure they'd be there in the morning. And that incurs additional costs, which people don't have. Mm-hmm. If people are dealing with cancer diagnosis, they're either they're not at work or they're receiving a pension. Mm-hmm. Who can afford to stay in Dublin overnight?
But also, not only that, they would fly in at night, have to get from the airport to accommodation, then get to the appointment in the hospital, and then sit around for the rest of the day for a return flight. I can see people almost refusing treatments rather than going through that. I think we would find ourselves with people that just say it's not worth it.
And that's true. You will find that patients will miss critical appointments because they can't get to Dublin for their appointments. And do you know, Greg, if you sit in an airport all day, if you're well, it's a long day. Mm. But if you're not well, if you're sick, you don't want to be sitting in an airport all day and going out at 7:00, back home at 7:00 in the evening. Mm-hmm. It's too long. Some of these people are coming out of hospital after receiving treatment. Mm. You know, I can't understand it. And I have spoken to Patrick Hope Gallagher and Piers Doherty, and we have requested an urgent meeting with the minister because, you know, it is the same old story. Donegal is neglected once again. And, you know, I'm so tired of this, that every time that there is something to do with this airline, you know, there's no consultation with anybody. It's just, you know,
why do we have to fight for everything? We have to fight for absolutely everything. You know, it's Tuesday morning, a new week. And here we are battling to not get something new, battling to retain our access, our timely access to cancer care.
And that's what it is. We don't have the medical expertise that these people need, and they need to get to Dublin. And so many of these would not be able to travel by bus or by car.
No, it's
to Dublin.
A nightmare. That's
too long. It's a nightmare. Yep. And this is the best way for them to travel. And all of a sudden, it creates a huge worry for all of these patients and children that have to travel to Dublin for medical purposes.
I recognise that.
I think it's very unfair.
I've recognised that you've spoken to effectively your local TDs in Pat the Cope, Gallagher and Pearce Doherty, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin respectively, but we have five. And this isn't a party political issue. This isn't a regional issue within a region. There are people that use these services from all over Donegal. Donegal Airport's not Pat's and it's not Pearce's, right? It's all of ours. I think it's really important that councillors, local TDs get in on this one really, really quickly and ensure that we... Because unfortunately, the people that this affects in a negative way don't get counted. That's the thing about this. Yous are on the ground flat out trying to give people the best outcomes as possible. But if this change happens, those people don't get counted any longer. They just become obituary notices or they just become hospital, long-term hospital residents. And I'm not writing everyone off with cancer. I hope people understand the place I'm coming from with that. But they don't get counted. And it's so important now that we are counting them and making sure that people, our families... our loved ones have access to this treatment that's on the doorstep of people in the capital.
And we will be in touch with the other TDs. Anybody that can carry a voice for Donegal, we will be in touch with them today. At this point, we are working on an online petition.
Understood.
I'm actually in Dublin tomorrow at the Irish Cancer Society. I would love to meet with the minister tomorrow. I would love to meet the minister and just, you know,
articulate
just have
that
a chance.
Term, Well, listen, I mean, I want him to hear. I want them to hear this conversation, Caroline. We've been in touch with the minister's office, the transport minister's office. So we will see what they have to say. We're going to seek to speak to them, of course, be it the senior or junior minister, anyone with their level of responsibility in relation to this, because they have to. Politics is about should be about accountability, and if someone makes this decision, they have to explain why they've made the decision and the rationale. The days of these things just happening and no one challenging it are over. They're certainly over in this part of the world and on this programme. If someone's made that decision, they have to come on, back that decision, justify it and show the rationale for it, because otherwise we don't live in a democracy. We live in some sort of a dictatorship. So we'll pursue that,
Absolutely.
Mary. I know you're doing what you're doing. People can sign that. But this is not about politics. This is about PSOs. It's about money. It's about airlines. And it's about the health and well-being of the people of Donegal. And that transcends politics, in my view. Mary, listen, keep us updated if there's anything that we need to be talking about or if you get any meeting tomorrow. As I say, we're going to bombard the minister's office demanding the answers I've just to set out the questions for. Thanks, Mary. That's Mary Coyle there. Connell, sorry for holding you there. You know, Mary does amazing work, her and the team at Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. So a critical voice in all of this. You've been looking at what we have to fight for compared to other parts of the country.
Yeah, well, I think on tourism, I mean, if you look at Kerry Airport, Tralee Railway Station and Killarney Railway Station, only 20 minutes from it, and they've up to 8 departures each day and 8 arrivals, and they're only an hour, they're not far either from Shannon Airport or Cork Airport. And I mean, if we're to develop tourism, say in Donegal, because of the transport difficulty to get into the county with no railway lines or anything, we need an airport like Donegal to be greatly enhanced. I mean, if you're developing new hotels, say in Gidore and that, and Dunloe and the whole of West Donegal, and we've put so much emphasis on our tourism industry, that you have to try to take people in from the UK and planes, you know, and have a package for them here for the week, because we're so isolated. We need to use the airport, and rather than having one flight a day, I mean, we need to look at how can we enhance it greatly to have a lot of flights from the UK, where we have a great number of Irish ancestry there, you know.
Yeah, and you make a good point. There are other areas with PSOs that are serviced by other forms of transport. We're not, and here we are battling to get a usable PSO connection to Dublin.
Yeah, and there's proposals to, you know, with new hotels, say in Gidore, and that's on the beside it there, that you're not going to have them hotels filled unless you have people coming in on planes from the UK and to occupy it and have a week's holiday for them here, like, you know, same as people, Donegal has a great deal to offer, and people package holidays to that what made the islands off Spain. But even Donegal is in the 60s. We had so many people coming here in hotels and everything there, and we have the airport now. So we need just to look at how can we have aircraft coming into the airport and bringing tourists in and them back out again.
All right, Connell, listen, thank you very much indeed for that. Final text before a break. Good morning, Greg. In relation to the change to the Donegal flight to Dublin, any planned change to the Kerry flight? Thanks, Charlie. So with sadness, we learned at the weekend of the passing of Joe Mulholland, who has died in Dublin at the age of 85 after a long illness. Originally from Stranorlar, Joe was very influential. He was director of RTE Television, I think up here. We're well aware of that, of course. But he is synonymous with the McGill Summer School, something clearly he was incredibly, incredibly passionate about. Michael Gallagher is chair of McGill Summer School in Glenties. And first and foremost, our condolences, Michael, to you and all involved with the McGill Summer School.
Thank you. Thank you. He's a great loss to us. Joe is very much a part of Glenties. His arrival every year in the weeks before the summer school to make arrangements created a buzz around the town, you know, and it lasted right in through the week of the summer school itself. A true Glenties man in many ways. Yeah, he had a great affinity for the town.
And it was really quite remarkable establishing this event that attracted the who's who of politics and beyond politics, in fact, just became a headline-making event.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. It probably originates in the fact that his father used to migrate to Scotland to work on hydroelectric schemes, seasonal work, and he would return home with some books, usually of Patrick McGill, like The Rat Pit and Children of the Dead End. Joe Mulholland, as a young boy, read those and was greatly inspired by the McGill story and how McGill had risen to fortune and fame through his writings and his selling his own poetry books door to door, his sense of initiative and determination to succeed. Yeah. So around about the end of the 1970s, going into 1980, a group in Glenties were looking to form an event, a festival, to commemorate Patrick McGill. At the same time, and slightly before that, Joe Mulholland had asked an important question, which was, what exactly had happened to Patrick McGill? Mm-hmm. He had risen to fame and fortune, and he had many books to his credit, and he had produced a play, which in fact was not very successful. But in 1928, he decided to move to the United States. And having moved to the United States, of course, the Wall Street crash happened. Patrick McGill moved to California, where the film industry was developing. He then moved to Florida, we know. But after that, he seemed to vanish off the face of the earth. And then around about the end of the 1970s, Joe Mulholland asked an important question. What had happened to Patrick McGill? Mm. And typical Joe Mulholland, of course, he did a very practical thing. He put an advertisement in a literary magazine in New England. And amazingly, a daughter of Patrick McGill's, I think it was Sheila, noticed the advertisement, contacted Joe. Joe went out to see them. He found that, in fact, Patrick McGill had died a number of years previously. He invited them to come back to Glenties, and that led to the establishment of the Patrick McGill Festival. And in 3 years, each year in succession, Joe told a story of Patrick McGill's early life, his rise to fame and fortune, his life as an Abbey poet in Scotland and in his life in England, and eventually his move to America and descent into oblivion. 3 years.
Wow. And from that, look what grew. And also to, I know he was close with Brian Friel. I wasn't aware, though I should have been, that he was a founding member of the Brian Friel Trust, which was established, of course, to preserve and celebrate the playwright's legacy. So Joe Mulholland will live on eternally in many different spheres, not just his contribution to broadcasting and news creation and dissemination, but also with the festival that will continue, I'm sure, and also to forever locking in Brian Friel's legacy in Glenties.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, he had a long-standing friendship with Brian Friel, and he regarded him as one of the greatest dramatists of the 20th century. Now, they both shared an intense regard, indeed love, for Glenties. Like, Glenties is the valley bed of Friel's plays, mm-hmm. and it is the home base of Patrick McGill. And when Dancing at Lunacy appeared in 1990, Joe Mulholland could not wait to bring this play to Glenties. Now, bringing this together to Glenties was a bit difficult because he could not get the full cast of the London production or the full cast of the New York production. So, ever the practical man, Joe drew some from New York, some from London. And Brian Friel sat at a performance in Glenties and the Comprehensive School within a stone's throw of the actual house his aunts, they're the characters in the play, the house that they had lived in. Joe's sense of the dramatic here.
What an amazing piece of history. Michael, we'll have more reflections on Joe Mulholland into the future. Thank you so much for joining us. I wasn't aware that he was ill. He was one of those characters that you would, such a strong character, you never even consider. Perhaps someone like he might get ill, if that makes sense.
He always turned up.
Yes, yes, of course. Thank you very much indeed. That's Michael Gallagher, Chair of McGill Summer School. Joe Mulholland, his wife Annie, died in August of 2025, and he's survived by his children, Fiona, Sylvain and Julian. And we're thinking on all of those and all of those. But he's left such a legacy. What a wonderful thing. It's always sad hearing of someone passing, but my word, if I could contribute a percentage of what he has and be remembered for that, you'd be grateful, wouldn't you? Hello, welcome back into the second stroke last hour of the programme. A caller says, looks to me that the powers that be are looking for a way to justify the discontinuation of the flight. Next year, they'll be saying most flights are empty and it's not financially viable, then pull out. What a fantastic point. And it's a point I was actually, believe it or not, going to make myself. You could argue then, well, no one's using it, so there's no justification for it. Really good point. They go on to say, look at Kerry, approximately the same distance. There are better roads, rail connection, and still they have a number of 737 services to Dublin daily, whereas they're trying to shut CFN down. That's Carrick Finn Airport, like Sligo. Where is the cope now? He promised big things as regards the Dublin flight. I know he's been speaking to the likes of Coyle, who we spoke to a little earlier on. I'm not sure if he's reached out to us or vice versa just yet. What about Inishowen, Ballyshannon, Glencolum, Kilkillybegs, and other areas that don't have an airport besides them? It's not fair for other areas in Donegal. We need to stand up for the whole county. I'm a cancer patient myself, and I don't have the luxury of getting a flight home the same day. But sure, why would you, in your position, understanding it, do anything else other than say, wow, okay, let's get this done. There is going to be a Dublin flight from Derry, which will service much of the east of the county. And also, too, it's a bit of a misnomer to say that it's only people in and around Carrickfinn Airport that use that service. There are people from all over that can make that journey, say, for instance, from Letterkenny to Carrickfinn, but they couldn't endure the journey all the way, say, for instance, via bus or car down as well. So it's not an east-west situation. We really don't, and I'm not saying you're doing it, we really don't want to do any infighting on these issues, or we'll lose altogether. Greg, to be honest, the flight should be leaving Carrickfinn at 7 a.m. going to Dublin. Anyone going up for business or work are not getting to the city until near 10. The thing is with that, though, it's like the cancer flights and the hospitals working with the cancer flights. When it's established, people can work around it, and an hour here or there perhaps can, you know, maybe someone's working day can be adjusted if they're commuting to work via the plane, for an example. But I understand what you're saying, but you're never going to get it perfect. But it seems to be at a sweet spot now when they're changing it. This caller said they should be adding more flights, not taking them away. Another caller says we need those flights to be kept on, but the 6 a.m. flight from Dublin to Carrickfinn sounds brilliant. Two loads of flights coming into Dublin after the buses leave for Letterkenny, although I think they've changed those times too, and you have to sit at the airport until a bus in the morning, plus the fact you have to get another bus in Dunloe at around or surrounding areas. You're travelling for hours when a flight would cut some of those hours. The only thing is, you know, who's going to be in Dublin Airport at 4 o'clock to get a 6 a.m. flight to Donegal? I don't know. I can't imagine there being a dozen people on that flight. Am I wrong? Joe Mulholland on his passing. Sorry to hear that Joe Mulholland has died. Rest in peace. Thanks for all that he did to remember wonderful writers Patrick McGill and Brian Feel and their connections to Glenties. I used to attend the McGill Summer School and it wasn't really for me, to be honest with you. It was a bit la-dee-da, you know, and it's just not the type of person I am. But I was able to stand and watch on and recognise how important it was to many, many people. And that's not in any way to take away from it. I said this before on the radio, and I'm not going to change that now. It was very highfalutin for me, but still, I went down and sat on couches with John Hume and Martin McGuinness and talked to these people there, and it was great to get access to them. How else might you have otherwise? So it was good. It was good, as I say, but just on an annual basis, just not necessarily. I didn't feel it spoke to me or many of the people here, but I could be wrong in relation to that. A caller says on Sinn Féin, I've never supported Sinn Féin, but Piers Doherty is right. How can we be military neutral and, on the other hand, contribute millions, billions, to finance an ongoing war? It's over a billion. Our government is selling us out to the EU masters at the cost of their own Irish citizens. This will not end well. There will be a breaking point, says that listener. Another, Piers is 100% right. Another, good morning, Greg. Would you please find out why Ireland holds $350 billion in US government bonds when our country is so many homeless and in poverty? On Jeffrey Epstein, he seems to have his claws into everyone in America and the UK and even Norway. One theory is that he was an Israeli agent and was gathering evidence to blackmail people of influence for the benefit of Israel. Our Candace Owens, sometimes if people are anti-Israel, they try and link everything to it. And Harvey Weinstein's another horrible person. People have tried to do that too as well. He had so much influence. He guaranteed a pardon from Donald Trump. This is what makes it quite bizarre that he died by suicide in a prison cell. And some video footage around the time that he did has gone missing. It is clear that he had an awful lot of dirt on people, that was his power. He would get people of power and he would get dirt on them. And, you know, it does make you wonder why he would take his own life when he had so much influence to get a pardon, to get a lighter sentence. His claws went into the highest offices in the United States and other countries as well. And also to the judiciary and other people of influence, which makes me question whether or not, listen, Russia disappears people all of the time. Do we think America's beyond that? Of course not. But anyway, I don't even think that's a conspiracy theory, to be honest with you, because I think there's actually some logic to it. I just it really upsets me that people that I have time for are giving people a pass because they are of the same political viewpoint as them. You know, that's what bothers me. That I think when you're talking about the abuse of children and young women, young girls, for the pleasure of rich men, that's what they were doing. It's horrendous, isn't it? And there are people that were adjacent to it, if not directly involved in it, and they're completely getting off scot-free. But the thing, as I say, that annoys me most is ordinarily good people are defending them, defending people associating with a paedophile, defending people who are adjacent to that, were aware of it, continued to engage with him, and there are question marks as to whether or not they attended any of his parties or wanted to attend his parties, such as your Elon Musk's, who claims that his emails are being taken out of context when he's saying, when's the next party? I don't want a quiet island situation. I want craziness. And then discussing young girls at a UN conference and all this kind of stuff. And people are defending that. And I'm not saying people are guilty without trial, but my word, they should be scrutinised. I think, anyway, they should be scrutinised. And people need to sort of say, is my political allegiance or my ideology actually you know, blurring my moral compass. Now, Community Garda information is on the way. Garda Grainne Doherty is in the building and will be joining me shortly. First, I want to say good morning to Fianna Fáil MEP Cynthia Ní Mórchú. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
You had Greg. Yeah, well, too. Listening there about the Guidoor has put the longing on me now to go on holidays to the Gaeltacht there.
Well, you would fit in like a hand into a glove, I've no doubt about that.
I love it up there. It's fantastic.
Yes, indeed. Now, you're pointing out, I don't know if it's an anomaly, but certainly it raises questions in relation to the number of drink and drug driving checkpoints we're seeing conducted versus the detections of drink and drug driving instances and, of course, then appearances before district courts. They've gone up significantly. What are you reading from these figures, Cynthia?
Yeah, well, first of all, Greg, I don't think it's an anomaly. I think the data and the statistics for the last 10 years and more in relation to road safety and particularly road deaths is only going in one direction, the wrong direction, and it's in getting higher and higher and increasing. And we do know, again, based on sound data, that last year in 2025, the amount of road deaths at 190 were the highest since 2014. So that's over 10 years ago. Now, I'm very concerned about the rising number of road deaths, and therefore I look at other issues pertaining to road safety. And one of them is mandatory intoxication testing, the checkpoints for drunken driving and drug driving and so forth. And based on the figures that I unearthed through the Pulse system, basically we've seen a 7.5% drop nationally in checkpoints between quarter three of 24 and quarter three of 25. Now, that's the figure nationally, a drop in checkpoints, 7.5% drop. And in most Garda divisions, there was a reduction beyond 7.5%, a reduction of checkpoints. And in very few counties, Clare, Tipp and Mayo, Roscommon, Longford and Meath, Westmeath, there was an increase. It was going in the right direction. But that's not good enough. If it depends on which county you're driving through or living in and driving in to ensure your safety, that's no good, I say. And what I say is, look, the Garda resources, whether they are limited and being built up, as we know they are, and we have an increasing population, but which or whether, and whatever resources the management of a Garda Síochána has and the commissioner has, him and his management team need to prioritise road safety, especially since you pointed out in the introduction, Greg, that the data that I got for the prosecutions coming before the district court for drug driving have increased over the past 2 years.
Drug taking is illegal, by a whopping 52%. My apologies.
In
Donegal, up 67%. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge.
And this is in no way to confuse the point whatsoever. But I do believe there needs to be more communication about how long drug stays in one system. And maybe that actually might deter people from taking drugs at all, and it could be effective in that regard. We have an understanding or some understanding of when you have a drink and at what point you are safe to drive. In relation to the drug testing, I'm not sure how many people are actively under the influence of drugs or there are still traces of drugs in their system. This is separate to the point that you're making. Do you think there is an argument for that to be articulated more clearly? And it's not so people take drugs at the right time. It might actually stop people taking drugs on the Friday or Saturday night and getting done on the Monday or Tuesday.
I think that is part of the solution, but I would have it ranking down rather far down the list, because I can tell you education is key. As a teacher, I know about the importance of education, and you're speaking about an information education piece, Greg, and rightly so. But can I tell you, with the shocking increase in road deaths, I do think we need more of a dramatic a consistent presence of an Garda Síochána at checkpoints on our roads, and Greg, not just around bank holidays. Like this bank holiday coming, it just triggered me, because I knew on the Wednesday or the Thursday, the eve of the bank holiday, there was going to be a lot of press releases, a lot of advertisement in relation to the fact that the presence of an Garda Síochána would be hugely increased at checkpoints and on our roads. Brilliant, I say. But what happens in between all of our bank holidays? And quite frankly, based on the figures that I've received for the reduction in the roadside testing, there is less testing happening. So whatever increase happens over a bank holiday, it's completely ineffective and it's undone by the rest of the year.
Yes, and you could say it kind of paints a picture that we're doing more than we are doing. Is it resources then? I mean, you know, how do you go from almost 13,000 mandatory intoxication testing checkpoints down to, you know, short of 12,000? You know, that's a significant drop, as you've been highlighting. Is it down to resources?
Of course it's down to resources, but it's also down to deploying and managing resources. So remember, it's not just about saying, oh, we only have XYZ amount of Gardaí, which, by the way, is higher than the amount of guards that we had in 2019. I just compared the two figures and I can give it to you when I have it to hand. But the point of this exercise and talking to you is that resources are managed and resources are prioritised. And the European Union, for example, when I went on the Transport Committee, one of the first things I wanted to talk about was road safety. And I found out that way back in the day in 2018, that they had rolled out a zero tolerance with regards to road deaths. And they wanted to reduce road deaths by 2030 to zero. And you might say, well, a very lofty objective. But nonetheless, they've been tracking it steadily. And I do know from figures released in March 2025 that the European Commission released that it showed that road fatalities for 2024 was a 3% decrease on 2023. Very good. Not enough to get to zero by 2030. But let's look at Ireland. So Ireland in the ranking is not doing well in terms of reducing road debt. So the 3% decrease that we've seen across the board in Europe is not reflected in Ireland. In fact, where the amount of road debts are increasing, Greg. That's not
Give us
good
those
enough.
Comparisons to 2019, because it is quite interesting, especially in the context of my resources question.
Yes, sorry. Do you mean the figures for 2019?
The fact that we were carrying out more tests with less staff, effectively.
Exactly. Okay, so if you look at 2019 and if you look at the roadside testing checkpoints, in 2019 in quarter three, there was 15,392 carried out. Call it 15,400. If we compare that to quarter three in the year just gone by, 2025, the figure was down to 11,958, just shy of 12,000. So you're talking, Greg, on that maths of a differential of 3,000 and more in terms of roadside
And I suppose
testing.
With controversies over testing in the past and also analysis of attitudes in that particular division too, it all needs a... It certainly all needs scrutiny, especially when our fatalities on the roads are going in the wrong way. For now, though, thank you very much indeed for your time. That is MEP Cynthia Ní-Mhoirthiú there. On the flights, is this anything to do with the new flight from Derry to Dublin that will operate? That will be operation later this year? It shouldn't be. I don't see how it could be. But anyway, there you go.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91 26025.
Now, it is Tuesday the 3rd of February. It's time for this week's Community Garda Information, and I'm joined in studio by Garda Grainne Doherty up from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Grainne, thank you very much for your time, as always.
No problem, thank you. Come
right, on. We'll get straight into the appeals, because we've got a lot to get through, and there's some advice as well upcoming. And we'll start with investigations ongoing into criminal damage in Carnamugga.
Yes, Gardaí are investigating this incident of criminal damage. It occurred at the Nass Moore Apartments at Carnamugga, Letterkenny, between 10 p.m. on Wednesday, the 28th of January, and the following morning, 7:50 a.m. on Thursday, the 29th. So a car had been parked up in the car park at that apartment block, and between those times, the owner returned to discover that the rear windscreen had been smashed. We're appealing to anybody in that area, if they witnessed this incident or if they have any relevant information, we're asking them to please pass that information on to Gardaí and Letterkenny on 91 67 100.
Now, criminal damage being investigated in Carndonagh.
Yes, another incident of criminal damage. This happened on the New Park Road, Carndonagh, on Saturday the 31st of January in around 8:35 p.m. So a bus had just pulled in to let a load of passengers out in that area. A couple of minutes later, something was thrown at the bus and causing a window to smash. So we're appealing to anybody who might have travelled at that location between 8:30 p.m. and 8:45 p.m. with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. That's, you know, it's early enough in the evening, so hopefully somebody might have observed the incident, either seen something that would be of assistance to us. Any information should be passed to Gardaí in Buncrana on 932 0540.
Crazy behaviour. Pointless. It's all pointless, but that's crazy altogether. Right, Market Square, Rathmullen next.
Yeah, this is in relation to a couple of incidents of home heating oil thefts. Now, we have seen incidents like this start to creep up over the past few weeks and months here and there, but these two incidents happened in two neighbouring properties in the Market Square area of Rathmullen. So between January 16th and January 29th, so the gardens of two neighbouring properties were entered and the oil was stolen from the tanks. One of the tanks had been unlocked, but the other tank had been locked, but the lock was cut. So we're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area between those dates to contact Gardaí in Milford on 915 3060. If anybody's seen anybody in round, looking, snooping around houses, running around the backs of houses especially, please contact us and make us aware. If anybody in that area has a doorbell camera or CCTV footage that could be made available to us, we're asking them to please get in touch also. The Garda Confidential line can be contacted on 1800 666 111. So the Gardaí in instances such as this usually go door to door in the area where the incident occurred, but just in case if they happen to miss somebody who has a doorbell camera they're not aware of.
It's brazen, isn't it, to go into the back of someone's house. Someone has, you know, taken the time to put a lock on, which in and of itself, you know, is more than many of us do. Cut that and pump the stuff out is really quite, you know, remarkable. And they don't always do that. Sometimes they puncture the base of the tank as well, too. So we need to really look at different ways to try and protect this commodity. Sometimes 500, 1,000 euro worth of oil in the tank itself, too, if it's damaged in the process. So there are things we can do, right?
Yeah, and especially at this time of year, you know, most tanks are full or relatively full. People would have filled for the winter time.
And I really, really wouldn't be surprised. If I was in this business, I'd be keeping an eye on where yolks were going. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to risk this and risk the time, you'd want to say, well, I don't want to be going there for 150 euro worth of oil. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're monitoring that stuff as well.
That's quite possible.
What could, exactly, and that's only me speculating, of course, not on Garda Síochána. What could we be doing better?
Yeah, well, there are preventative measures everybody, all of us can take to avoid the theft of home heating oil. So a lock. And as you said, in this instance, this homeowner did the right thing. They had the lock there, and unfortunately then the lock was cut. But a lock, a good quality closed shackle padlock fitted to the tank, should be your starting point. Check your oil levels frequently. Try to arrange smaller but more frequent oil deliveries. Install security lights. This makes it a much harder target for thieves. They're less likely to enter any property that's well lit up. Place the tank as close to the house as regulations allow and in view of one or more windows. And this might make them consider the chance of being seen too high to risk. And ensure that the tank is not visible from the road to passing traffic. The position of the tank can have a significant effect on how a thief views how hard a target is. So again, this incorporates the same message of hiding the tank from public view. Plant shrubs or build a fence to screen tanks from public view.
What kind of shrubs? In the past have said the prickier the better.
The pricklier the better, I would say.
Prickly bushes is what
definitely
you've said in the past.
Yeah, the harder to get through. Yeah. The type that caused the most pain when you try to
Every
go through
Every time you
them.
Mention prickly bushes, the garden centres are inundated.
I'm doing them all a favour, yeah. consider fitting an alarm system, and this will warn you if the oil level drops suddenly, and be vigilant following a delivery. And be aware also that thieves may return to steal replacement oil following an initial theft. Of course, they're aware then that you have to refill the tank again. So just in the days that follow, if this does happen to you, just keep
an extra
eye.
And we need to be the eyes and ears as well too, don't we?
Yeah, of course. Your neighbours, look, if you're living in an area and there's lots of houses around you, especially if there's elderly people, vulnerable people, you know, keep an eye out for them. Watch out. If you ever see suspicious vehicles in your area, jot down the registration number. Any type of activity that seems untoward, please report it to Gardaí immediately.
And I'm not in the business of flogging security cameras, so, you know, don't even message, ask you where I get them, or go to your local electricity store or message, I don't mind. I got delivery of two security cameras, right? 2K, which is very high quality. Yeah. 88 euro for the two of them. They run off your Wi-Fi, they record 24/7, and if there is some interference, they've got two LED lights at the front, two white lights that flash. Mm-hmm. Right now, I defy anyone who's going around stealing oil to stick around when they see the lights going on this camera and they know they're being recorded.
And CCTV is a massive deterrent.
And these are really clear 2K colour images, even at night time. Right, so the point is I'm not trying to sell them. Obviously, why would I? There's nothing in for me. But they connect to your Wi-Fi and, you know, they can be quite a distance from the house and you can have them to alert you if there's someone there, but certainly to record, and these lights flash and it's a deterrent. I don't think home security's ever been quite as affordable.
Exactly, you know, because €88, you know, for peace of mind.
For two cameras, right?
And as you say, you could be at work, you could get the alert on your phone 100%. To say somebody's at your property and you can alert Gardaí then, even you're not at home.
If you've got a Fire Stick, you can watch them on your telly.
Yeah.
If you've got your Google streaming device, you can watch them on the telly if you so wish, or you can have a tablet on or whatever. And the point being is that the security measures have never been, before it was wires all over the place. You drill a hole in your wall, you stick this a bracket on and it's a magnet and your camera goes to the magnet and it's safe and secure and you charge it once every 3 or 4 months and that's
it. Yeah,
that's
it's never been easier really to have, you know, security cameras
around
your
home. And that saves you 500 quid of oil and maybe a tank as well.
And it can give you great peace of mind too.
That's you know.
Even if you're away on holidays, you know, and you can check your phone and check around your property, it's great. You know, it's
But the amount of cameras and alarms that get installed after an incident, which it's human nature, same, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Right, okay, so that's good advice from Gran. You just have to make it as difficult as possible, whether it's through shrubs or cameras or locks or whatever it might be. I just think last year or the year before, then we got a spell of tanks being drilled towards the bottom and it's a double whammy then. Okay, thanks for that advice, as always. Continuing with the appeals now, road traffic collision being investigated in Stranorler.
Yes. So on Sunday, the 1st of February, a three-vehicle collision. This occurred at Dunwiley, Stranorler, so on the N13, so the main route into Stranorler after the Kilross Junction there. Shortly after 1:45 p.m, so two vehicles were sitting stationary in the road. They were waiting for the vehicle in front of them to turn off onto a side road, and they were then struck from behind by a third vehicle. So the driver of this third vehicle left the scene on foot. He was described as being in his 20s and tall and slim. One of the passengers from one of the vehicles involved was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive medical treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. We're appealing to any motorists who may have been in that area with a dash cam between 1:40 p.m. and 2 p.m. to make that footage available to us. If anybody was there, you know, if they were sitting in a car waiting in the traffic, if they witnessed the collision, or if anybody can assist with any relevant information, we're asking them to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530.
And that individual still being sought?
Yes.
Right,
yes,
so
yes.
People will have seen that. There's not obvious escape route. Someone had to come and pick them up, or unless they lived locally. Okay,
yeah.
Right.
And it's believed he went in the direction of Tevic Mai, actually up a side road off the N13, up a side road. So even residents in that area, you know, somebody in a house might have spotted this man on the road and give a more accurate description.
All right, people are going to have information. It's just hopefully it's forthcoming. Rightio, a stolen car has been recovered and progress in that investigation. What information do we have?
Yes, so on Tuesday the 27th of January, Gardaí were alerted to the fact a vehicle had been stolen across the border in Northern Ireland that day. So a coordinated response followed between an Garda Síochána and the PSNI. So as part of that, extensive patrols were conducted by Ballybuffet Gardaí, Donegal Town Roads Policing Unit and the Armed Support Unit. They assisted also. The stolen vehicle in question was stopped later that day in the area of Spearstown, Donegal Town, by Gardaí following the deployment of the Stinger device. So the driver and two of the passengers in that vehicle were arrested and they were charged to appear in court in relation to a number of matters.
Now, we flagged it in advance, didn't we, that there would be extra resources distributed to enforce road safety over the St. Bridget's weekend. And we have some data in relation to that, Grania.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to go through a very small amount of the detections from the weekend because there were quite a few detections over the weekend. And the Enhanced Road Safety and Traffic Enforcement Campaign took place over the St. Bridget's Bank holiday weekend. So from 7 a.m. on Thursday past until 7 a.m. today, Tuesday, 3rd of February. Over the course of those few days, 12 drivers across the county were arrested on suspicion of driving while under the influence of alcohol or drugs. So that was 5 for drink driving and 7 for drug driving. There was actually 17 arrests for driving under the influence from last Tuesday until this morning.
Wow.
But 12 of those were over the course of the bank holiday weekend. A number of drivers were arrested also over the weekend for dangerous driving offences. So I'll give an instance of one of those. Buncrana Roads Policing Unit, they were conducting patrols on the night of Sunday, February 1st. They observed two vehicles racing each other at high speeds on the four-lane road on the N56 in Letterkenny. Both vehicles were stopped and the drivers were arrested and charged to appear in court. And this follows an arrest that was made on that same stretch of road. So that's between the Polestar roundabout and the Dry Arch roundabout there on the four lanes. So that detection was made a few days ago and a driver was detected travelling at 135 kilometres per hour. So we want to remind drivers the speed limit in that area between the Dry Arch roundabout and the Polestar is 60 kilometres per hour. And over the course of the weekend, fixed charge penalty notices for speeding offences were issued to a number of drivers on that same stretch of road, but also on roads in various parts of the county. A number of vehicles were seized over the course of the weekend right across Donegal for offences such as no insurance, no NCT, no tax and no driving licence. Look, we're continuing to urge drivers behave in a responsible manner. Please slow down. Don't drive while under the influence of alcohol or drugs. Don't use or hold your mobile phone while driving. And wear your seatbelt. It was publicised, I suppose, over the weekend, and I did notice a number of people commenting on the Facebook posts over the weekend. You know, why is this only happening? Why are the guards only out? Because it's a bank holiday weekend. That isn't the case. Yeah. The guards are out on the roads 24/7, you know, all day, every day they are. Really and truly, I suppose it's publicised more over the course of the bank holiday weekend because the roads are busier during the bank holiday weekend. It's a busy time in the roads.
Of course, yeah.
And we want to really emphasise the road safety point. You know,
and I mean, it's only through interventions like that and potentially a great deal of good luck that we aren't talking about any fatalities, because unfortunately the driving behaviour is there. And the one thing also too, which I think is very important, is to understand, of course, the Gardaí of a critical role in policing the roads and what have you, but ultimately these are decisions that we are making ourselves, not necessarily us as individuals, but as a society, right? Yeah. We are deciding to do this stuff, and yes, of course, you'd want to guard on every corner to make sure it didn't happen, but this is our behaviour, you know, and at what point are we going to take responsibility for what we contribute in this space, rather than always expecting other humans to tell us not to do it and to be there to slap us on our wrists? You know, do we need to call it out more? Do we need to highlight it more? You know what I mean? Like, it's not just the guard's responsibility. We have a responsibility here as well.
And just, you know, just some of the very high speeds that were detected over the weekend out in the dual carriageway, especially outside Letterkenny, I mean, some of them beggar belief. And I don't think some of these drivers realise, you know, if a tyre blew in your car, if an animal runs out in front of your car, any amount of things can happen. And if you're driving at excessive speeds like that, you haven't got a chance. And the drivers around you also, they don't have a chance also, you know. So you need to keep that in mind. And we just are really, please do slow down. There was a serious amount of speeding detections and arrests because of the excessive speeds that people were driving at over the course of the weekend. So the message really, slow down.
And in case you need just to understand the impact that this might have, as you would know, there's a sister podcast to this podcast, to this show, sorry, and it's available on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. And it's a conversation with a very brave young woman called Bernadette, whose sister died in 2019 in a road traffic collision. The family accept that speed was involved, and that was the finding of the inquest into it as well. And it's Clarice who very sadly passed away. And in that podcast, Bernadette talks of having to tell Clarice's three-year-old daughter that mommy's not coming home, and the impact it had on the twins' mom, who was at the scene. And Bernadette, travelling to the scene, was met by an ambulance and a hearse, and knew that the news couldn't be false, that her sister had been taken from her in the prime of her life. And she says and attributes it to speed. It was a high-powered vehicle. Speed was involved. And it was only by the grace of God they were able to open the coffin for a wake, because the devastating injuries were from the neck down. And as tragic that loss is, that in a way was some sort of a, well, at least, if that makes sense. So speed kills, it destroys lives, it wipes lives out. And if you think Granny's just doing the same old stuff and sounds like your mum or dad or me, would you ever change the subject? Please listen to that podcast and listen to the reality of that, what can happen in that moment when you make a decision and the ripple effect it has on your mum, on your sister, on your brother, on a wider community and indeed potentially on your young children. So as I say, it's not just talk. That's a real story. And if you want to listen, you can, because I think Bernadette speaks on this publicly in the past, but I think it's one of the first times she's sat down for a chat about it. And, you know, 2019 is 2026 now, and it's like it happened yesterday. They're living that.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes, too, you know, you just wish some of these drivers that are driving at such excessive speeds or maybe driving while under the influence of alcohol or drugs, you just wish, if you could, in an ideal world, if you could take them out to
them
the scene
moment, yeah.
of a fatal road traffic collision, let them see firsthand the devastation that is there. Let them accompany the guards to the house and to tell, to break the news, to bring a family's world crashing down around them, to break that news to them. You just wish sometimes that they could see the reality of what can happen in that split second, you know.
A former colleague of yours was in a limited way describing the scene of attending a multi-occupancy fatal road traffic collision, a high-speed road traffic collision, and even identifying people, if I could put it like that. I'll be as sensitive as I can, prove difficult because you've got a group of people in a small space and you can imagine. No one wants to be a part of that. No one wants to put anyone through that. And this is why we talk about this. It's try and stop it happening, because a lot of this, 99% of this, is avoidable, especially when it's driver misbehaviour, if I could put it to you like that.
Can
right.
I just say
of
one
course,
more thing?
Of course, whatever you want, because no, it's an incredibly important issue.
I haven't got this in the notes now, but it just came into my head. One of the boys on the roads policing unit recently asked me, could I highlight something on here? And it is quite important as well. So I'll just mention it briefly before we move on. He asked me to highlight, he said that this is quite a common occurrence, and I have seen it myself over the years also. At the scene of a road traffic collision, a serious road traffic collision, a fatal road traffic collision, regardless what type of collision it is, there are a certain amount of drivers that will slow down and take their phones out as they pass the scene of a collision. They don't know if somebody's passed away. You know, they don't know what the situation is. Curiosity, I suppose, just curiosity maybe. And, you know, they slow down and they start videoing or start photographing. Next thing, that's up online. The family of that person that has been involved in that collision maybe hasn't even been notified yet that this collision has taken place. It could be a fatality, you know. And next thing, if this is online, that's extremely, you know, so traumatic for a family to find out in that way. And it's just so disrespectful, you know, you know, give people a bit of dignity at the scene of a collision. You know, that could be a member of your family. You would not appreciate someone else going along and videoing a scene. And they were at a collision recently, and I think they issued, I don't know, was it two or three, they stopped the drivers involved. One of the roads policing unit stood at the side of the road to watch who was at this behaviour and videoing and photographing, you know, while they were in control of their car. And they were issued with fines on the spot for holding, you know, using the mobile phone while driving. So we just ask people, please be respectful,
common
be mindful.
Courtesy, yeah, common my courtesy. Word. Put yourself in that position and give people dignity and give people the concentration to do the life-saving work that they're actually doing. Scam alert.
Yeah, we mention these regularly. This seems to be a new one. They're impersonating the Gardaí again, and we're warning the public in relation to recent attempted fraud incidents. So the scammer or scammers are once again impersonating members of an Garda Síochána. They'll call you, it's a scam call, and the caller will say they're calling from an Garda Síochána, and they state that there's an active warrant in existence for you and that you're going to be arrested at your home if money isn't paid. So we're just advising the public, look, the Gardaí do not do this. This doesn't happen. So if you've been the victim of this or any other type of scam, please contact your bank, number one. Make them aware if you've provided any financial details, and also please report the matter to us.
Yep, and inform people who may not be as tech savvy. You might be listening to that and go, well, who would fall for that? We do all the time, and it's about shock and awe, and that's how they get you okay. And crime prevention talk upcoming. What's coming up?
Yes, a crime prevention talk. So this will be given by the Divisional Crime Prevention Officer, Sergeant Fergus McGrory. So this is on Thursday, the 5th of February at 7:30 p.m. in Terman in the clubhouse, the GA clubhouse there. And everybody is more than welcome to come along to that if they wish to do so.
Garda Grainne, thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate your time. Community Garda information, that is it for Tuesday, the 3rd of February. It's back for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. During Community Garda information there, I mentioned the Greg Hughes podcast, which we have episodes released every Friday. There's four or five or six up there now at the moment. But yesterday we released a bonus podcast. It was an interview during my time at Northwest Radio, where I interviewed former TD Jim White, of course, of the White Hotel Group. And it was sort of talking about his live kind of a podcast. But really interesting, because as I say, it was recorded in 2002. I was much younger then. It was just post the general election where he missed out. And it was just when Enda Kenny was coming onto the scene. And we discuss how he got into business first, in terms of he got involved in the grocery business. He got involved in politics with Fine Gael because there was a bit of competition between him and Councillor Sean McAniff in business. And he thought, right, well, I'll have a go at politics. And Sean McAniff was a member of Fianna Fáil. So he says, well, what other parties are available? And ended up with Fine Gael. He also had big issues at that time coming up to that election with the then deputy, or soon to be deputy, Thomas Gilday, and some comments that were made about a colleague of his. So he talks about politics at that time, but also about business, how the county was booming and the amount of trade from Northern Ireland and the capacity in Donegal hotels. And also then, as I say, his views on the national political scene, just as a fresh face, Enda Kenny was arriving on the scene, believe it or not. So it is, for those of you interested in Just Chat, you'll enjoy it. But also for those of you interested in politics and politics of a time, it really is, I think anyway, a great insight. So that's on our website, or you can search it out, the Greg Hughes podcast, on Spotify particularly. And I think soon iTunes, if it's not there. You'll find the podcast on iTunes. It's everywhere, really, to be honest with you. But as I say, just it's about an hour, and it's just a real interesting insight into politics, not only in Donegal at the time, but nationally, but also business and the hotel industry and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, there's another episode being released for you on Friday. I'm recording one this evening with a very interesting gentleman who many of you will know. I'll tell you more about that. And it's not about famous people. For me, regular people are the famous people, but every person has a remarkable story, and that's what we try and tease them out. I would like to say I was waiting on this, but I wasn't. The Garda said to plant something prickly around the old tank, right? Okay, so that makes sense, doesn't it? Keep the bad people away. But this person's an oil man. And he says, you didn't think about me trying to get into the oil tank. All right, well, we could leave a path for you. Right, okay, I understand where you're coming from. On Epstein, do you really think Epstein committed suicide? Hardly. He knew too much about people in power. No, I don't, if the truth is told. Hi, Greg. Where did you buy your cameras? They sound brilliant. Thanks. It's a mixture, right? I do like to shop local. But there's certain cameras at a certain price point that have a certain functionality that I do get online. If you DM me on Facebook, I'll tell you where they are. I'll link them to you, because I think it's just an affordable way for people to get that security and peace of mind. And you know what? It's sitting on the telly watching cameras, your own cameras. Nothing happens, but it's quite interesting. Right, that's where we leave it on the show for this Tuesday. Thank you so much for all of the comments. In their hundreds, no joke. We'll get to any we missed out tomorrow.